Okay, well, I have to thank the other co-organizers, Rachel and Marina, for allowing me to give a talk. We've had so many great people come and so many talks, and so for me to be able to wedge in, I really appreciate it. And I also very much appreciate everyone who's attended here. I've learned a lot over these 3 days, so thank you for coming. So we've been talking a lot about cylinders horizontal, and today, or in this talk, I'm gonna take that cylinder and I'm gonna make it vertical. And I'm interested in the fingering instability that occurs down the outs. The flow that we'll be looking at is going down the outside of the cylinder. Okay, this is work with my undergrad, Mark Segal. Mark's now a PhD student in photonics at Creole. Okay, so when thin fluid layers spread on a solid substrate, well, there's lots of applications, of course. We've learned a lot about the lungs and tear films. And in manufacturing, you want to apply even coats to paints, semiconductors, coating medications, and of course, the lava flows are also examples in a geological setting. And when there's some sort of external forcing, the front of the fluid can form this instability, a fingering instability. And we haven't seen in the last talk, we saw a little bit of this instability. But in this case, the field ahead of the flow, is, as I understand it, is not coated at all. Okay, so as in the last talk, there was a coating there. Here, this is the coating, the actual fluid is coming from above and coming down. This is an inclined plane, and this is a picture from Huppert's first work in 1982. Okay, so a lot of work has been done on this. For planar surfaces, all the experiments that I know of are on, I think for pragmatic reasons, are on the incline. And so Huppert, and then later Sylvain Dusan and Duproin and Condic, they look at the fingering behavior, so they try to characterize, say, the wavelength, the growth of these fingers with respect to inclination angle. And then some theoretical work began with Troyan and her group in 89, who looked at a vertical plate and the linear stability of the contact line. So my interest will be on that, on the contact line, the leading edge of the flow. Later, Bertozzi and Brenner looked at generalized this to an inclined plane, the stability of the flow. And of course, Omar's review article with Richard Craster covers a lot of this topic. There has been work on curved surfaces. So a recent, I think Tagagi just completed his PhD dissertation with Huppert, and he looked at two cases of coating on the outside of cylinder. Now the axis of the cylinder is coming out at you, and they deposit some fixed volume of fluid, and they let it flow down the outside of the cylinder. I didn't pull a picture from his paper, but you can see fingering in this case. And then he also looked at flow on the top of a beach ball. So he deposited a volume of fluid at the top of the beach ball and watched it flow over the side, and you can see the nice fingering in this picture. This is the MAB paints advertisement. Okay. So what I would like to do is consider the dynamics in the case that you have an axisymmetric contact line. So flow down, so imagine we have a cylinder of radius capital R, and fluid is flowing down the outside. I'd like to compare this to the cylindrical case, because now we've got azimuthal curvature in the picture, and this distinguishes it from the cylindrical case. And I'd like to understand how azimuthal curvature influences the behavior of this contact line, its dynamics, and so forth. This is useful for coding things like fibers to conduits. Okay, so in this problem, this is just going to be a gravity-driven flow. There's no Marangoni forces, and again, no surfactants in the problem. So questions that you might ask are: how does substrate curvature affect the features of the contact line? The inclined plane experiments looked at how the incline changed things, and I'll be looking at substrate curvature. And then you might ask the question: well, is there a critical radius above which the contact line really thinks it's on a plate and not on a cylinder, where curvature doesn't really matter, and the behavior converges to that of the planar case? And then is there a critical radius below which I could predict that fingering is inhibited? So if I had flow, say, down fish line, you might not expect a finger to appear at all. Okay, so those are the questions that I'm interested with this kind of a problem. Okay, so in the problem, just to let you know, we'll define the flow using this modified radial coordinate. So y is going to be is a radial coordinate going from the substrate of the cylinder out to the free surface. The free surface will be defined by this variable small h, and this capital H will come in later on. This is typical in these types of flows. You have a quasi-steady film thickness upstream from the contact line. So it's going to be some characteristic length scale in the flow. Okay, and it's got gravity working down. So first let me tell you about the experiments. We did a bunch of experiments with cylinders ranging in radii from an eighth inch diameter up to 3 inches in diameter, or like working in inches instead of centimeters. And we used two fluids, glycerin and silicone oil. So the setup is we have a cylinder, and we want to be able to look at we want to characterize the fingering around this periodic contact line. So we need to be able to see all the way around the cylinder. So we set up mirrors behind the cylinder so that we could get reflections and be able to see all the way around. So this is a typical image. This is the front face of the cylinder that you're seeing, and then these are reflections in the mirrors behind. And if we take all these images together, we can compose all the way around the cylinder, and we can calibrate our distances as well just using some grid. The way that we delivered the fluid was we sort of tried to match what they do in flow down a plate. So we set a cylinder on top of, a reservoir cup on top of the cylinder, and we filled it up with fluid, and then we lifted the cup a millimeter and let the fluid ooze out of the cup. When you get down to a quarter inch cylinder, you can't come up with a capillary tube where the fluid will flow out because of capillary effects. So instead, in those cases, we had to pump the fluid onto the top of the cylinder. But in all of our experiments, we set the height between the fluid source and the actual cylinder to be a millimeter. And we're thinking of that as setting that capital H in the problem. Okay. To be able to visualize the flow, we're using clear acrylic cylinders, so we have to add fluorescent dye to our fluids, and then we use black lights to actually image the experiment. So this is a typical experiment, and so Mark has to take these images. So we run movies so we can see the evolution of this. He's got to be able to figure out how many fingers are all the way around. Okay, and he's measuring things like the wavelength and the length of the fingers as they grow. So we're just trying now at this point to match the experiments that were done by Huppert and all the others. And what we find is that the contact line does develop a fingering pattern for all the cylinders that we chose to look at. So we didn't find a cylinder where the fingering was inhibited. And these are some typical experiments from glycerin and silicone oil. So, what did that do? Okay. This is not. Okay, so that's so silly. These are the same symbols as right here. Okay, so glycerin and silicone oil are the two fluids we're using. Glycerin has a higher, this is supposed to be surface tension, than it's almost 3 times more than silicone oil. Their viscosities, kinematic viscosities, are about the same. This is not a significant difference. This is about 800 times more viscous than water, and this is about 1,000 times more viscous than water, so very viscous fluids. And these cylinders are the 3-inch diameter cylinders. So what we see is that, very similar to the inclined plane experiments, with glycerin, the contact line becomes unstable. In fact, it becomes unstable very close to the top of the cylinder, and you get fingers that form very long rivulets, they're straight, and the tips of the fingers travel down, but the troughs remain stationary. And in the case of silicone oil, the tips and the troughs both actually travel down, and you have less uniformity in terms of the fingerings. And what we found is that in the silicone oil case, in flow down a plate, they found these to be sawtooth pattern. We don't see that here. It could be effect of the curvature. We can measure the speed of the tips and of the troughs. They follow a power law scaling. And we find that, in general, glycerin here is red data, silicone oil is blue data. So here's the power law, or the power for the tips and for the troughs of the silicone oil. And we find that silicone oil travels faster than the, glycerin travels faster than silicone oil for all of our cylinders. And that makes sense because the glycerin troughs are fixed, so all the fluid's going down into the tip. And in general, the speeds are faster than these dashed lines would be the same data for inclined plane experiments. But we've got a vertical cylinder, so things should move faster than down an incline. And we have trough speeds too. Generally, we find nothing actually scales with the radius of the cylinder. The width of the fingers appears to be invariant to the cylinder size. So here I'm plotting this against bond number just so that it falls on a nicer graph. But the bond number just is a definition that includes the radius of the cylinder. So radius is actually increasing as we move along here, and the width is constant basically through all of our experiments. So the width isn't aware of the wetting properties of the fluid. The wetting properties set by that surface tension or by the cylinder radius at all. So what I'd ultimately like to do is be able to compare the type of fingering behavior that we saw in the experiments to theory. And so next, I want to derive a lubrication model for this type of problem. So the only difference is it would be characterized here. So we see these very long straight fingers for the... These are tracings from the experiments. Okay. Just showing you what we see on the front face. It would be impossible to draw everything all the way around. Okay, but this is very common. This type of form is common for the silicone oil. No, we don't see the sawtooth pattern. So that might be an effect to the curvature. Okay, so now I would like to actually derive a model for the flow. I'll go through, most people have not been showing the derivation. I'll just show you a little bit so because you'll see some strangeness in that you're not used to, and it'll be explained through the derivation here. So again, R is the radius of the cylinder, H is the fluid-free surface. So if Y equals 0, we are at the cylinder substrate, and if Y equals H, we're at the free surface. H is that upstream film thickness, and I should mention that's something that's difficult to measure in the experiment, so it'll come up again. We make a lubrication approximation by assuming that upstream film thickness is small compared to the radius of the cylinder. And I just want to point out that this epsilon is proportional to the curvature of the substrate, so it's something useful that will help us to think about our results. We non-dimensionalize the problem using scalings by Evan, Schwartz, and Roy. They developed a model for a horizontal cylinder, so we're going to use the same scalings. And basically, the thickness of the film is going to get scaled by capital H, and the axial by dimensions by R, the radius of the cylinder. Okay, so we have Navier-Stokes equations, the continuity equation, Navier-Stokes equations, no slip, the normal boundary condition, the tangential boundary conditions, and the kinematic boundary condition with the operators I've given up there. We've got a Reynolds number. The bond number I'm going to be using, I'll use this hat to define it. Again, rho g r squared over the surface tension. But you can also put that in terms of what I'll call a reduced bond number. Rho g h squared over gamma is more typically used for flow down a plate. One of our reviewers made a big beef about that. And so we noticed that we could write this reduced bond number in terms of the bond number we're using in our experiment. It's given as a epsilon negative 2 times the reduced number. Okay, so in the lubrication approximation, we'll assume that epsilon is small, and we want to get rid of our inertial terms, so we'll assume that epsilon squared Reynolds number is small as well. Okay, so that reduces a lot of things in the problem. And then, of course, we expand the pressure and the velocity fields and powers of epsilon, linearize, solve with flow variables, substitute into conservation of mass, and where the fluxes are given by these formulas, and up pops our evolution equation here. Okay, it's a little different looking than if you're familiar with flow down a plate. Here's our gravity term and term due to surface tension. You'll notice these epsilon H terms might be new to you. Those just arise from conserving mass across an annular surface. An annular cross-section. So they just come from multivariable calculus. And then this extra term here, this one, so this is curvature due to in the radial. So now we have curvature also in the radial direction, not just in the axial direction. So we get an extra term in our surface tension terms. In terms of our experiments, okay, this is going from PowerPoint 2007 to PowerPoint 2003 conversion. So this is epsilon here, our slenderness parameter. So the upstream film thickness I tried to measure in the experiments. It's very hard to measure because the fingering happens quite quickly. But I measured it to be about 0.085, so we'll use that value through the definition of epsilon. Epsilon is H over R. And so all of our epsilons are on the order of 10 to the negative 1 or 2, so that's good for our to use for our model. And the Reynolds numbers are also pretty small for glycerin and silicon oil. And so what this should say here is that we're satisfying the conditions of our lubrication model for these experiments. The other thing I'd like to point out is just in terms of the bond number more generally used for flow down a vertical plane, if we use that definition, they would be considered constant in these experiments. Okay. The other nice thing is we have a very wide range of our bond number to explore the dynamics. Okay, so we look for a traveling wave solution to our lubrication model. We have a telephone. I should not have worked so hard on this talk. Okay, so there are six traveling waves here for our six different size cylinders for silicon oil. So in the calculations to get these traveling waves, I put in the actual parameters from our experiments. And you can see a difference in the traveling waves. They get, as epsilon increases, which means the curvature is increasing of the cylinder, the width of the capillary ridge is actually widening and it's getting less steep. That's dramatized here because C is actually scaled by the radius, but that is an effect that we do see, just more over-dramatized here. Okay. We can, if you notice the height, so here I'm just plotting the heights of the capillary ridge, and they're non-monotonic with epsilon. And so we could look at, in order to understand how the curvature is playing an effect, what I'm doing is plotting the maximum height versus epsilon. Remember, epsilon is proportional to the curvature of the cylinder. So the dashed line here would be what is the maximum height for flow down a vertical plate. Okay, and when epsilon is on the order of 10 to the negative 2, we see that both the glycerin and the silicon oil converge to the value you'd expect for the height for down a vertical plate. When epsilon is on the order of 10 to the negative 1, you get pretty big divergence from that constant value. Okay, so when epsilon is on the order of 10 to the negative 1, now substrate curvature is really having an influence on the traveling wave. And remember that glycerin has higher surface tension than silicon oil, and so we're seeing the effect of capillary effects as well. You can get a higher capillary ridge. Well, epsilon actually, I don't think I understand. Epsilon is actually, that's supposed to be a proportional sign. It's actually equal to H over R. We have two things going on. We have a bond number and we have epsilon. And I'd like to think about things more in terms of epsilon than bond number. Because epsilon is proportional to curvature, and I want to understand the effects of curvature. It's a little bit complicated because I don't know if we might need to talk more, Omar. I'm not certain I totally understand, but I can't just get rid of these epsilons because there's an epsilon here being multiplied by my fourth order term. And so the unfortunate thing is if I let epsilon go to zero, I don't recover the equation. That's a bugaboo about my model. that was by my choice using the Severin Schwartz Roy. And there is, I have seen another set of scalings that where this didn't have to happen. But I'm, you know, 2 years into the project and there. Okay. All right, so now we can look at the, okay, so now what we'll do is perturb the base solution, this traveling wave, and we're going to perturb in a way that's sinusoidal in the azimuthal direction. Q is going to be my wave number. Remember, I've got a periodic contact line here, and beta is the growth rate. And so what I'm showing you here is a series of dispersion curves that are representative of the parameters in my, remember, I have 6 cylinders and 2 fluids, so 12 different experiments running around, or a set of parameters. And so 2 different graphs here. These are, in the graphs, the dashed lines are for glycerin, the solid would be for silicon oil. These come in pairs, so like for these two, this would be the largest cylinder. The black would be the next smaller size cylinder, red smaller, and then these are actually the smallest cylinders. So this is the 1/8 inch, 1/4 inch, 1/2 inch, and then I forget what would be 3/4, 1 inch, 3 inch cylinders. And what we see is that the effect of capillary effects. So we can pick off from here the growth rate, the most unstable mode, the cutoff mode, say for this curve here. And we see that for almost all of the conditions, maximum growth rate, if you compare the silicon oil to glycerin or the cutoff mode or the most unstable modes, are larger for silicon oil than for glycerin. So we'd say silicon oil is more unstable to fingering than the glycerin is. And Q must be integer valued, that's right. I'll discuss that. I think I'll bring up what you're asking about. Yep. So Q must be integer valued, that's right. Okay. If we look at how the maximum growth rate scales with the bond numbers. So you should think about this bond number as bond number increases, the radius of the cylinder is increasing. We find all the data, whether it's glycerin or silicon oil, collapse, and we get scaling that goes like bond number to the 0.42. We see similar scaling. Now, so what I'm plotting here is the wave number versus the bond number, okay? And there's a lot of information here, so let me take you through it. Glycerin is going to be indicated by circles, silicon oil by squares. These red and blue data points come from theory, from stability analysis. So at any fixed bond number, red would be the most unstable mode, most unstable Q value, and blue would be the cutoff mode for instability. So at a fixed bond number, anything below the blue curves would be modes that are unstable in the problem. And the solid data is our experimental data. So we actually ran 36 different experiments. That's all represented here. Okay, so as I forgot your name, Eugene pointed out, the contact line is periodic, and so the number of fingers must be integer valued. Now, if the wavelength is constant, if you have a sine wave going around, then you can make this, if we approximate things as such, then we can think about the number of fingers in a pattern actually being equivalent to the wave number to Q, okay? There actually is some variation in the wavelength, so that's an approximation we're going to be making here. So for fingers to develop, Q must be greater than or equal to 1. If Q is less than 1, then no finger could form, okay? So for a fixed bond number, say down here, the cutoff mode is below 1, so this would be considered a bond number where you wouldn't expect a finger to form. Okay. We'll say that the contact line is stable when the unstable modes are less than 1, so that would be, for instance, in this region here. Otherwise, the contact line is unstable. So once we get above 1, if the cutoff modes are above 1, well, that defines a region that's unstable. So actually, this whole shaded region, values that are of Q that are less than the cutoff mode but above 1, that would be the region of unstable modes. Okay, and what we find is that our data falls within that region of unstable modes, the number of fingers that we actually observed in experiments. they don't follow the most unstable mode. There's noise in our experiments, okay? Or it's not as linear as linear stability theory predicts. So we find excellent agreement between the theory and our experiments. We find the wave mode, whether it's the cutoff mode or the most unstable mode, they scale with the Bond number. They go like 0.45. So Bond number goes like the radius squared. And so in essence, what that's saying is that the number of fingers increases nearly linearly with the circumference of the cylinder. And we can make a prediction where we see the cutoff mode intersect with 1. We can predict a critical Bond number where you expect the contact line to be unstable, or we can put that in terms of a radius. And the question is, can we predict when no fingering occurs? And that's actually a little dicey, because in this region here, now for values of Bond number below this cutoff, we're really at the limits of our theory in terms of our requirements on epsilon. Okay. If we look at the wavelengths that we measured in experiments, so the wavelengths varied quite a lot. So instead of plotting the wave mode, I could think about the wavelengths from our linear stability analysis. So the cutoff wavelengths, so this is data for glycerin and silicon oil. The solid curve comes from linear stability theory. It's the cutoff wavelength for instability. So anything above this solid line is an unstable wavelength. And the dashed line is the most unstable wavelength. And then the data is what we actually measured. And so with both experiments, we see really good agreement between what we actually observed for wavelengths and what's considered unstable by linear stability analysis. And then again, you can go to theory for a vertical plane. This would be the most unstable wavelength for glycerin or for silicon oil. And again, we see when epsilon is on the order of 10 to negative 2, stability analysis converges with that for vertical plane for both cases. So this is where we think curvature doesn't really matter, but when epsilon is on the order of 10 to negative 1, you get movement away from what a plate actually acts like. So, and the other thing that we notice is that with an increase in surface tension, glycerin has higher surface tension than silicon oil. The wavelengths are actually longer than silicon oil, so surface tension increases. I thought someone was giving the finger there. That's a mailbox, actually. Okay. Okay, I'd like to just say one thing. I basically went through all of our results. I'm not going to repeat those. Sort of future directions. So I'm not satisfied with the fact that our model doesn't really work when H is comparable to R. And I really would like to have a model to be able to explore that. And the other thing is just a question of, you know, how does inertia affect these fingering dynamics? So the first thing I'd like to talk about, I'm on sabbatical this year, and this is something I thought I'd just bang this out really quick. Omar and Richard have a very nice model where they were looking at viscous beads flowing down a vertical fiber, down fish line, basically. And this was a model that very much appealed to me. It's a 1D model. If I'm going to look at fingering, I need to have azimuthal dependence. So I thought, I'm going to take this model. I'm going to extend it to include theta dependence, and I'm going to be able to look at stability here. Why this appealed to me is because there's slenderness parameters in terms of the thickness, so R plus H would be the sort of steady thickness of the film, divided by the capillary length. So it doesn't depend on the radius of the cylinder, which my theory does. And so, in essence, if you assume this epsilon is really just a Bond number, so it's saying the Bond number must be much less than 1, which is true in our experiments. Okay, and so that seemed to me a very promising assumption to make. So here's my naive idea. Let's extend this using their scalings. And so I have to come up with a scaling then. So V is the azimuthal component of the velocity. So I have to decide, okay, well, how am I going to scale that, because I'm moving on to 2 dimensions. And the scaling is set by the continuity equation. So if I go from if I convert this to non-dimensional terms, then the components and the radial velocity components, they're offset by U and R, the dimensions. So you get something, those have a prefactor of this epsilon U over R plus H. U is characteristic velocity. I don't know yet what this numerator should be on this term, but the dependence in space is set by the 1 over R on the from this operator. So I know I've got R plus H down here for my dV d theta term, and then my dW dz looks like U over L. But if you notice what the definition of L is up here, well, that means this term is really just equivalent to epsilon U over R plus H. So that means then that this numerator has to be epsilon U. And so that means that I have to scale V as epsilon U times V hat. I have to scale it the same way as my radial velocity in order for all terms to be order one in the continuity equation, which is a typical assumption that we make in this modeling. And so if I scale the equations, then at leading order, here's my free boundary problem, continuity equation. These are my my three components of Navier-Stokes and the radial, azimuthal, and axial directions in my boundary conditions. And what you notice is that the pressure can't have any, dP dr equals zero and dP d theta equals zero. So that tells me pressure can only depend on z and t. My pressure cannot depend on theta at all. And so when I move to the normal boundary condition, the right-hand side of this equation depends only on z and t, but s here, well, I forgot to tell you, s is the location of the free surface in Omar's theory here, so s is the radius of the cylinder plus my h here. Okay, so you should think of this capital S as the location to the free surface. And I want to have theta dependence in that to get fingering, but this is an overdetermined problem. This is only a function of z and t, and that's over constraining this right hand side here. This is all the information about my free surface, and I can't have theta dependence on that side at all. And so the problem just becomes mathematically inconsistent. And so I spent about 7 days this fall trying different approaches to look for a model, and I'm stuck. I can't figure out a model where H could be comparable to R. This is just one example to show you for this problem how things went awry. So I'm pleading, if anyone knows, I'd like to talk to you about ways around this. Okay, I'm sorry I went over, but I wanted to plead here.